Sacramento has a new tag team in the midday. It's Styles and Watkins on Sactown Sports.
We got one more for you, and it is Domantas Sabonis and his exit presser. Here he is.
The season overall, a lot of expectations heading into it. How do you guys feel like as a group you've handled those expectations, and would you classify this season as a disappointment, not making the playoffs?
Yeah, it's definitely very disappointing how it ended. You know, it's frustrating. You know, it's tough to even watch the playoffs, you know, knowing that we could be there and fighting.
Domas, Mike talked a lot this season about you didn't catch teams by surprise anymore compared to last season. I'm just curious how you saw that and how you felt that on the court and how you think this team grew over the course of the year of recognizing that and still finding ways to win.
For sure. You know, I don't think that's an excuse either because, I mean, you're playing against a team and you need to win. You know, you can't always catch them by surprise. But I definitely felt like post All-Star break, we definitely had a lot of improvements there. And then we know we had a couple injuries go down, which kind of made us start again from the beginning and figure this whole new rotation thing out. And we ended up falling short at the end.
Domas, two questions for you. Number one, is it hard to look at this season and really assess like what it was? Do you take it at face value for the win total, where you finished in the West, or do you look at some of the games that got away and you know some of the injuries you dealt with and think that, you know, like as we've heard, this could have been maybe a 51, 52 win team?
Definitely, yeah. It's hard to assess right now. You know, I was talking to some of the guys, like, it wasn't a bad season. You know, we were always up on a good note, on a high. You know, like, usually when you don't make the playoffs, you have a losing record or you're almost at 500, you know. So it definitely didn't feel that this way. So the fact that we're not in the postseason is definitely hard to swallow right now. So I can't really answer that.
And Malik's future, obviously, is a big focal point right now. How important has he been? And you know, do you approach him? Do you say anything just about how much you guys would love to keep him
around? Trying every day since the beginning of training camp. you know, obviously, he knows how what I think of him and how much I care about him. So, yeah, hopefully we would love to have him back.
Domas, a year ago, well, not this soon, though, but after the season was over, after the Warriors series that you was in, you had mentioned that there were some things that you want to work on in the offseason, which it appears that you did because, I mean, you went crazy with the double-doubles and you led the league in triple-doubles. You know, going into this offseason, because you and De'Aaron both have made improvements in your game, what are some of the things that, you know, you want to focus on individually to continue helping your team win?
I think it's everything the same. You know, you just got to keep trying to focus on your craft and be more consistent, more efficient, more ways that you can help the team out. We clearly see we need more on this team, you know, to compete with the best, especially in the West like this. So anyway, you know, we can improve our games to help manage that gap. It's going to be a big thing for us.
Domas, two questions for you. First, are you healthy heading into the offseason? If that's the case, does that change your offseason plans at all?
No. Yeah, everything's good.
And then two, you just alluded to it. What changes do you think that need to be made or need to be added to this roster that you guys didn't have this year?
Right now, for me, that's not a question for me. That's more for Monty and Wes. You know, we're going to have these meetings later.
Domas, as you kind of reflect on your tenure here in Sacramento the past couple of years, how does it kind of feel, or how would you assess the way you've been able to evolve as a player? You know, kind of becoming the hub of the offense, and talk about the double-double numbers and the triple-double numbers. Just from your point of view, how does it feel to know you've evolved in this kind of a way as a player in your stint here in Sacramento?
It's been really fun. Like I always say, since the first day, you know, I've been welcomed here with open arms, and it's made it very easy for me to transition and really be the player who I am today, you know. And you know, I always give credit to my teammates. You know, they're the ones who make it easier for me on the court, so their trust allowing me to be me on the court is what's led me to be here.
Hey, Domas, you talked about, you know, those decisions are Monty and Wes. I'm just more curious, you know, you and Fox, they obviously have such a commitment to financially, and wondering how comfortable maybe you having a voice in some of the decision-making that goes on with this organization. Like, do you feel like you have an impact in that way and have the freedom to speak up in that regard?
Yeah, of course. You know, Monty and Wes have always been really open with me and including me in some big decisions, you know, which I appreciate, you know, and hopefully it keeps moving forward that way, you know, and we have a big summer coming up.
Domas, your individual accomplishments this year from the triple-doubles, the double-doubles, everything of that nature, I know it's focused on from an individual standpoint and as an individual stat, but how did the team kind of grow around you and get to a point to where you were able to have that success?
You know, just every day grinding, being together, you know, learning from each other each game. Season was a lot of ups and downs, you know, with everyone with rotations, guys coming in and out, next man up. And us adapting to that, I feel like, is what kind of helped us get to where we were. You know, we just fell short at the end.
Domas, I know last summer you worked with Doug all summer long on sort of the finer nuances of the game. What is it that you plan on focusing on this season, especially the jump shooting? Is it more threes? Is it more mid-range? What is it you're trying to work on?
Like I say, you know, it's always a bit of everything. You know, my overall game, I feel like, you know, through the offense, I kind of have to have a threat everywhere on the court since I'm getting played through, you know, on the elbow in a situation like that. But knowing Doug, he already has a whole book written for me, and we got to go over it now. And he's very creative, you know, and we're going to get to work straight away.
With you and De'Aaron being the stars of this team, how do you feel like you guys did this year as leaders on and off the court, and where can you continue to grow?
I feel like there's always room to always room to improve and to grow in that situation, you know. And yeah, you know, De'Aaron has grown hugely, you know, speaking up, you know, keeping guys accountable, you know. And I think it's definitely showed, you know. And we just got to kind of keep adding on to that into next year, you know, with this group or whatever may happen. I don't know.
Domas, you're locked in, you know, for quite a while financially and contract wise here. De'Aaron's, you know, going to come up sooner or later. Keegan's going to come up. Do you worry that when you take what might feel like a step back this year, that maybe some of the guys around you, their confidence gets shaken? Does your confidence get shaken in the direction and where you guys are going and what you can be?
I definitely don't think it's shaken. If anything, it'll just motivate us more. I do believe that there always has to be a little step back before you kind of climb up all the way to the top. So the fact that it happened now, you know, I'm only hoping for good things moving forward.
Domas, on your right here. You've been asked about this a lot all season long, but now that it's over, the offensive side of the ball just wasn't what it was last year. The defense got better. You're obviously incredibly important on that end. Just what's your final assessment of why the offense seemed to take a step back and how big of a part of the offseason conversation is that going to be?
I think it's going to be big. We got to go over things and see how we want to play. You know, we had a really good year offensively last year and this year. Obviously, the year before, we had a lot of players having career years, if efficiency-wise, you know, and all that stuff, you know. So that obviously had an effect this year. But there's always ways to improve and get better shots. And it should definitely be a big emphasis this summer, going into training camp to see how we can kind of adjust that or make it better or see what players think.
Domas, one of those career guys was Malik, obviously. He talked about, you know, almost campaigning for him a little bit and trying to convince him. But can you speak to just his overall importance and to this roster that you feel he has? And did it take even that much more of a step this year from last?
Yeah, you know, with Malik, it's not even on the court. It's everything he does off the court. You know, he keeps us together. He brings this energy, you know. He always has guys with a smile on their face, you know, and kind of has that off-court vibe that every team's looking for a guy like that on the team, you know, and he definitely brings that with this group where we have a couple of more quiet guys.
Oh,
thank you, guys. Thank you.
Sorry, Domas, one more question for you. Can you just talk about the growth of Keegan and what you've seen out of him? I know you guys, you know, have a pretty good relationship. Just speak on his growth as a player and how you guys have kind of been able to grow together on the team.
Yeah, you know, we've all seen it this year. You know, he's had games where he's shown flashes of really, really, really good basketball player, you know, and hopefully we can keep adding to that this summer, you know, and I know he's going to work hard. He's already talking about it. And, yeah, just try to get him out there and be more consistent with us out there and, you know, really, really be him.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
That was Domas. When we return, we will react to Domas's presser and all the pressers that we've heard today. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
live and local, it's Stiles and Watkins. Watch the show on youtube.com/SacktownSports1140.
Or listen on the Sacktown Sports app.
Heard from Malik Monk, De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis. Most recently, Domantas Sabonis was asked a lot of questions, and Sabonis was one of the shorter pressers. You know, Sabonis kind of gets to the point. He answered all the questions, but obviously Malik, people had a lot of things to ask Malik, and De'Aaron is really the face, so De'Aaron had a lot of things to answer as well. But, you know, Chris, one thing, I know there was somebody out there when Sabonis was asked about improving. I know there was somebody out there that was hoping that Sabonis would bring up the mid-range jump shots, the middies. But I know he will be working on all parts of his game throughout the season. He's healthy going into the offseason, which is huge. Yeah, one of the main questions was whether or not guys would feel a little bit downtrodden as to how the season ended. And, you know, Sabonis, he is really good at answering questions like this. He said, if anything, it will just motivate us more.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, a lot of teams, I think this could be a pretty damaging thing for the locker room. You know, everybody feeling like you fell short of expectations. A lot of people are going to point fingers and say, oh, you know, if you didn't do this, if we didn't do this, we told you this. But, you know, Mike Brown has said it, and we kind of have joked about it a bit, but this is the most connected locker room that he says he's ever had. And I think that's definitely a sign of that they were able to recognize, like, hey, this is not the way that this season ended isn't necessarily indicative of how good or bad this team is. We know the talent that we have in this locker room, and ultimately, just because you didn't, you know, it kind of ties into the Giannis thing of last year, success or failure. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would, I mean, they're going to view this season as a failure if it's one or the other, but I think the fact that they understand that this team had more to give, and ultimately there's a lot of reasons why they weren't able to show it. To me, I think that's a really good sign that these guys actually did like each other. It wasn't just lip service. It wasn't just Mike Brown, you know, throwing the media a bone and trying to make him seem like everything's actually fine with this locker room. I think that's truly a sign that things are good in that locker room, that they would use this pretty terrible ending to your season as motivation and not as anger.
Yeah, and as far as the, I guess, the system, if you will, and we'll talk about Keegan and the DHOs and Keegan's growth. I mean, there are a couple clips, Chris, against the Pelicans where they were literally treating Domas like the Kings treat point guards, right? They were just getting the ball out of his hands to not allow him to initiate the offense and create. And I do think that that's something that the Kings will need to address and go back to the drawing board as far as, you know, and Sabonis kind of talked about it. We got to go over things and see how we want to play. I don't know if I'm straight up saying that the offense has hit a ceiling, but it's either it's hit a ceiling or you need players that are going to be able to execute it at a higher level, because I do think it's pretty close to hitting a ceiling, and they have to either add some more wrinkles or something. They can't go into the next season with the same roster and or the same system that they've been running. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's a question definitely of if they need to switch it up, because you can say this year was tough, but you can also say that if you want to talk about this team's ceiling offensively, the ceiling was the number one offense of all time. So it's kind of tough to fall which one of those is more your team. And I think that's kind of the thing that you have to figure out, is how much can we rely on shooting, and how much of it was just this was a bad year for our shooters. And you know, that's probably going to bump up the next year. But also, I mean, at the end of the year, they took on a defensive identity, and that's not something that this team has had in the past. And I think ultimately, De'Aaron said it in his press conference, that's how they need to win, is figuring out how to win in more than one way. And that's learning how to play defensively for 82 games. Do they need to kind of take away some of the offense in order to have the stamina to be able to do that over a course of 82 games? Do they need to bring in different personnel? Is it maybe, yeah, like we're losing Malik or whatever. We're trading HB or Kevin Herter or whatever, whoever you're getting rid of. Who are we bringing back in to maybe change the identity? And by changing the identity, of course, you're also changing the style of play. I think, you know, and Sabonis even said that's not really up for me to decide. It's up to Monty, right. Wes, and of course, Mike Brown. But those are definitely the things that I took out of Sabonis' presser is even he's questioning, like, I don't know if this style of offense is necessarily the future of what we're going to look like.
Yeah, you just can't have an offense with so many stipulations and ifs, right? As long as we're healthy and as long as we're hot,
yep.
The sky's the limit.
Same with a lot of people.
Right, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. That is not something that you're going to be able to depend on year in and year out. And we saw it this season to the tune of, you know, 46 wins.
Yeah.
Again, in a West that is just on a different level.
Yeah, for sure. And then that goes into the Keegan conversation too, which we kind of spoke on a little bit there. But, like, is Keegan ready to take a leap for this team, I think, is another huge thing that they all have to play a part in. Like, figuring out, A, how much do they – I don't want to say how much do they believe in Keegan, but this year was already supposed to be a really big jump for Keegan, and it was in some aspects for sure, but do you want to rely on that again this offseason? I think a lot of that is going to come down to who they bring in and who leaves and all that, but, like, you know, Domas saying Keegan's already talking and thinking about how he's going to improve in the offseason – that's great. That's awesome to hear that they already have a lot of plans for how they want him to get better. But what's it actually going to turn into, I think, is of course, just another really big storyline going into next season. Is this team going to double down or triple down on Keegan Murray again?
Yeah, and it depends on Malik Monk. Where they go in the direction as far as Herter, what's going to happen with Herter, what's going to happen with Harrison Barnes. So a lot of questions that need to be answered. 916-339-1140. Ron's got more to say. What's up, Ron? What you got for us?
Yeah, thank you for taking and letting me hold so long. This is from Malik. I hope it's within your power to stay with the Kings. I also hope that the guys got the deep purses figured out. If you're gone, the Kings lose. You were the life of the team for the last 2 years. You went out on the floor, looked around who you could mess with first, and you did it. And you did it with emphasis. You're a jewel to watch on the court. The Kings need you. And if they don't get a deep pocket, I hope you stop during the game on the next team you're with and stand in front of them and say, I told you so. We love you.
No, thanks for the call, Ron. Yeah, and we've broken this down, and we're going to probably just going to have to keep breaking it down until the Malik decision is made. But it's not a matter. I mean, Vivek could say, hey, Malik, we want to give you the Rivercats Stadium if he wanted to. But he legitimately is not allowed based on how they signed Malik. Right. They cannot eclipse the number that comes out to about 17 mil a year. Yeah. So it is, if the Kings, and that is what Malik said in the press conference, he can get more money somewhere else because it is within the NBA rule book based on how they acquired Malik and where they are in their logistical and accounting realm with the Kings. They can't overpay him.
Right.
They cannot pass $17 million a year, even if they wanted to. That is part of the reason people feel a little bit pessimistic about Malik, because he can probably get $20 million a year from someone else or maybe even more than that, right? And I think once you start getting to $22 and $23 million a year difference, talking $6 million a year difference, and De'Aaron Fox, we have that sound, we'll play it. De'Aaron Fox talking about how you can only play this game for so long, especially somebody like Malik Monk, who got drafted high, people thought he was going to be a bust, and is now, he's seen the other side.
Right.
So he's probably one of the worst people to have. This isn't Klay Thompson, who's made
Tons of money, yes.
A ridiculous amount. This is not Klay Thompson, where he can afford to take a pay cut, relatively speaking, of course. Malik hasn't gotten the big bag yet.
This is it.
Yes,
this would be the big bag.
This is the big bag. This could be his only opportunity. Yeah. We joke about Dennis Schroeder all the time. You might only get one opportunity to get that bag.
Yeah, no, and I think in a weird way, of course, it'd be great if the Kings can throw him more money than $17 million in a perfect world, but I've been thinking about this in a weird way. I think it's probably best for the Kings organization that they are capped. I don't think 17 is the right number, but it's good that they're capped because truly, I think if there wasn't a cap, everybody's 100% right. Like, Vivek would do whatever it took to bring Malik Monk. The Kings would have absolutely zero leverage in any sort of negotiation. So in a weird way, if you care about this team's like long-term, if you're like an NBA 2K My GM guy, in a weird way, this is the best thing for the Kings if Malik is going to stay, because you're going to get him at the lowest possible number because he's not a $17 million $7 million per year guy. Mm-hmm. He's probably a lot more towards those 20s, and the Kings probably, in order to have him not think about considering other offers, probably would be willing to pay him $25 million if all things were created equal.
In a perfect world, that cap would be at $20 million a
year. Probably,
Because then you feel really good about Malik staying. Unfortunately, this is where we're at. But we also know that in a perfect world, Malik said he would definitely, and I quote, definitely want to stay. Definitely. When we return, whether you have Malik Monk or not, somebody else needs to take a big step, and that's Keegan Murray. We have some quotes from Keegan Murray's presser, and also what that means for his development. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacramento has a new tag team in the midday. It's Styles and Watkins on Sacktown Sports.
From the 530, how many years can they offer Monk? Yeah, basically what they can offer, the best deal they can offer Malik Monk is 4 years, $78 million.
Yep, that's it. It is, starts off at just under 18 and gets as high as, I think, $21 million is, like, how it would escalate in price, but...
Sure.
It's definitely not what he'll get on the open market. I mean, on the open market, his contract will probably start at $20 million and then... escalate from there. It's a good deal. It's not anything fantastic. I mean, especially when you look at what Grayson Allen just got paid from our friends down in Phoenix. I mean, it's definitely not that kind of number, which is a little concerning, but it's really all up to the other suitors. He got a 4 year he got 4 years 70 actually. So he did get around there, and Grayson Allen shot 46% from three this season. He was a starter. I think everyone would probably say Malik is a better player or more important to a team, but 4 years 70 is, I wouldn't think that really affects Malik's market actually. Because it's clearly not higher than what he would get paid from the Kings. So it's not disrespectful. And then it's not really, low enough to where it's pushing the market down. So,
I mean, a nightmare scenario would be if D'Lo, the Lakers, and I don't even know what the Lakers are able to do, but Lakers blow D'Lo out of the water, keep him with a ridiculous amount, and D'Lo's sitting at $23 million a year or something like that, because then you would say, all right, well, Malik is going to be around. Or I don't think the Lakers would ever give Russell 25. But
I hope not.
How terrible would that be if D'Angelo Russell gets a nine-figure contract while Malik Monk ends up with like 4 for 70?
But that would be Malik's choice, at least. It would be his choice.
But we know which one's a better player, right?
Yeah,
and so does Malik.
Yeah, absolutely.
Klay Thompson making $43 million as we speak.
Yeah, but there's also, if D'Angelo takes that money, with great power comes great responsibility, and you can't be missing shots if you're making that much money.
I would be thrilled if the Lakers signed D'Angelo Russell
that deal. It would definitely be best for the Kings, absolutely. If D'Angelo Russell signs that big of a contract.
He can't guard anybody.
He is, this is the best offensively he's looked in a really, really long time, maybe ever. I wouldn't want to bank on it. He's on a contract year. He's a guy who's shown to be very selfish at times, and I think this role is perfect for him that he has right here, right now. But what happens once LeBron takes another step back? Then D'Lo is going to say, this is why you pay me so much. And I don't think the Lakers want that. We want that here in Sacramento, but I don't think the Lakers should want that.
I don't think so. Well, another player that needs to take a leap is Keegan Murray.
Yeah.
And Keegan, this is from our own Brendan Nunes from the Keegan Murray presser. Keegan talked about not being as one-dimensional next season, meaning primarily scoring off of DHOs. He mentioned running PNRs, playmaking for others, and creating his own looks. Also said the attention he got from defenses was eye-opening.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's a positive step in the sense of he's on people's scouting reports now.
Well, is that the equivalent of, you know, back in the day, you go to school and the girl you got a crush on notices you and says, oh, did you get a haircut? Oh, did you get your braces off?
I think it was a lot more than that.
Well, a couple girls then, because a couple teams had their eyes on Keegan Murray. And yeah, Keegan, I mean, ultimately the Kings did, and Mike Brown talked about it as well. They snuck up on, I believe that was in the, either there's a Ringer article, there's Sam Amick Athletic, there are multiple articles on the Kings right now. They are a very hot topic in the basketball world, but you weren't sneaking up on anybody. You snuck up on the Warriors, but that was more of the Warriors just not understanding how to play actual basketball. But everybody knew what Keegan Murray was bringing to the table this season.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I think it's on Keegan to figure that out. That's the sophomore slump that everybody talks about isn't the fact that people forget how to play basketball between their first and second year. It's your first year, you're on nobody's scouting report. Maybe towards the end of the year, you start to be a part of it. But in your second year, people know who you are. They know what your game is. They have full 82 games of film on you, plus some playoff games. So they understand a lot better of what you're trying to get to, the kind of things that you don't like, the things that you do like. And, you know, it just naturally comes with time. And I think everybody, every rookie going into, or I guess second-year player would tell you, yeah, second year is a whole lot different. Ask Scottie Barnes last year, and then he took a major leap forward again this year. I expect that to be Keegan. I said it on the post games earlier. I definitely think this is going to be the only year of Keegan's career, at least for a very long time, where he doesn't shoot 40% from three. I think it was just a lot of teams figuring it out. I think it was a lot of him being asked to do a lot more than he had ever been asked to do before. And I think next year he's going to come in with a much better expectation of what is actually going to be thrown at him. And plus, he's got actual confidence, too. I think it's going to be a really big third year for Keegan. But he's got to, of course, put the work in the offseason. He's got to work with De'Aaron Fox. I would like to see him work with more than De'Aaron Fox. I think we saw a lot of Keegan Murray copycat moves this year that he directly took from De'Aaron. He had this weird like stutter step that he clearly learned from De'Aaron, a little step back mid-range jump shot that he clearly learned from De'Aaron. You know, if HB is going to be back, learn the HB slow euro.
He's already got it on lock.
You know, if Sabonis is going to be around, learn how to bang around with some bigger guys. Learn how to finish through contact. I think there's a lot of things that Keegan can do this offseason that can really, really help him next year. And, you know, of course, I just think natural maturation is going to be big, too. He's 24, 25 years old. There's going to be a whole new crop of 18, 19, 20-year-old guys that he's going to be much more physically mature than. You got to hope that all those factors play into it, and he has a really, really big third year.
We kind of go back and forth about this, but who is the Keegan Murray comp?
I think the Klay Thompson one's getting more and more accurate. I do think
finally,
that's it. Yeah,
finally.
I never loved the Chris Middleton one. It never made sense to me. That's the one that a lot of people threw out at draft time. I thought Chris Middleton is like actually really good, and he's got a handle on him. Keegan has absolutely no handle whatsoever.
Last year, De'Aaron was talking about his finishing. This year, he's roasting his dribbling.
And it's his handles. And next year is probably going to, you know, you mentioned that he talked about pick and roll. He's got to be able to pass, too. Like, that's definitely the next part of his development. You get no playmaking at all from your forward positions. And you can't have that. Like, I think that that's a huge gap for this team, that they just don't have anybody who they can put the ball in their hands and say, Maybe Keegan draws a double and gets somebody open. Maybe Keegan drives and dumps it off to Sabonis because he gets so much attention. There's not a single person not named Monk or Fox on this team that can do that. And I think Keegan's who they're looking to. It becomes a point of how much, like, they clearly view Keegan like a raw clay, where they're just like, we can manipulate this however we want. At some point, he's going to reach a limit to where he's stretched too far. You can't ask him to shoot well, to defend at a high level, to dribble, to pass, to, you know, to do it all. It's like, at some point, somebody else has to pick up the slack, and Keegan is just good at what he's good at. It'll be interesting to find where is that limit, because I do think he's got a lot of room to grow, but at the same time, you know, you mentioned De'Aaron saying he's the worst finisher in the league. Where, like, how far of a ceiling can you actually go on that before right. It's just, look, even if he gets four times better than he was when he started, he's still at a pretty low level. Maybe that just shouldn't be something we explore, if that makes sense.
But this is the same thing that we were talking about, I believe, last week, as far as who do you believe on your team to be one of those two guys that can just do it all?
Right.
You're do it all guys. Yeah. And you have a Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson wasn't a do it all guy. No. He's going to the Hall of Fame, but he did certain things at a high level.
Yeah.
So it's Keegan Murray, yeah, to your point, if you continue to add stuff to his plate, then have the conversation that you think he's a future MVP.
Right.
Because that's where this is going. Yeah, but right. If not, then you what the organization needs to do is start to figure out who they want Keegan Murray to be.
Yes,
you
absolutely.
Can't have him be all the... And the problem is when you have too many other guys who are, okay, Kevin Huerter does one specific thing.
Right.
HB kind of does everything. I called him back in the day the dull pocket knife, you know, the dull Swiss Army knife. So the problem is you're asking Keegan to do more because you're not getting other things from other places.
Right.
So they need to decide what they want, because I don't think Keegan Murray is a future MVP candidate.
I don't either.
And right? I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, there's not.
You got one. We can say De'Aaron is. I mean, most teams don't have two that you drafted just floating around.
Yeah. No, exactly. I completely agree. Like, you can't ask him to do everything. And you have to, at some point, like you're saying, you've got to ask other people to step up the same way you're asking Keegan. Like, like Keon Ellis. If Keon Ellis is going to be a part of the starting lineup, he's a guard. He's got to be able to have the ball in his hands and create a little bit. Can he run some pick and roll? Can he? We talk about finishing. Keegan's finishing is one thing. Some of the finishes Keon had in fast breaks were just as bad. Like, he's just jumping and throwing it at the rim and honestly hoping for a foul. There's a lot of room for improvement, but it is. I just kind of get bothered every time I hear Keegan's going to fix that. Oh, that's part of Keegan's development. It's like, this kid can do so many things. Like, and we already saw this year, the improvement on defense came, yes, but it was at the expense of him shooting 4% worse from the 3-point line. And I do think they're connected, because he had to exude so much more effort. So if you're going to ask him to do everything, you also have to understand he's going to fall off in some of those places that you still really, really need him. Because, you know, at the end of the season, they weren't really using Keegan like a lockdown defender. And at that point, the damage had already been done. I would have much rather had Keegan Murray 40%+ 3-point shooter at the end of the year than Keegan Murray kind of two-way guy.
Because I even said, I mean, and that's what they talked about with the catch and shoot threes. How about Keegan shooting off the dribble?
Sure.
They just skipped over that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want this guy to become a jack of all trades and a master of none. When we return, we will hear from De'Aaron Fox. What do you have to say after the game on Malik Monk? Stiles and Watkins, Sactown Sports.
Live and local, it's Stiles and Watkins. Watch the show on YouTube.com/SactownSports 1140.
Or listen on the Sactown Sports app.
A's update as they take down the big bad Yankees in Yankee Stadium. Sorry, Frankie Cardicelli. 2-0. The it was 0-0 the whole game, and then my guy, Zach Geloff, goes Oppo Taco 377 Bombo to the opposite field to take the lead. And then the flamethrower himself, Mason Miller, who averages about 102 to 101 miles per hour every pitch. Three strikeouts.
Yeah, he had a 103 as well on one of them.
To end the ball game. So that is a Yankees after Aaron Boone got tossed because a fan yelled. The ump told Aaron Boone, hey, one more thing and you're out of here. A fan that was sitting above Aaron Boone said something, and the ump thought it was Boone and tossed Boone. That was in the second inning, and apparently that was enough to lose to the A's. So good win for the A's. Chris, I have something here.
What's up?
And we're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but I feel like we have to do it at the beginning of free agency, or every once in a while, I feel like we just have to refresh. And it comes in. And you know what? As we were talking about it, I thought about saying something, but I figured, relatively speaking, we all get that. But you're always going to get one of these texts, so I did want to address it and then just kind of move on from there. From the 916, if generations of your family can't flourish with $17 million a year, there's something fundamentally wrong.
Stop it.
Then no money can fix that. And I'm not doing that. We do pocket watch when it comes to other teams, not when it comes to players. You know, a wise man once said that they would never put themselves in other people's shoes, right? And I don't know what I would do if I were an NBA player looking at that type of money. But what I do know is this: nobody knows unless you're in that situation. So we understand that these people make Monopoly money. I feel like there should be a caveat to start every conversation when we talk about money. Obviously, this is a ridiculous amount of
all
money.
All the generations that it could help.
Exactly.
You know, 17 mil is great, but imagine what 30 mil could do.
Right. This is all relatively speaking. But with that being said, to whoever it is, to the 916, I don't think you can sit there and say, unless you've been in that situation, oh, I can make 20 million a year or 17, and I'm going to turn down 20 mil to have 17. Yeah.
Think it's about it like it was your job.
Yes,
just place your job, and then a different competitor offers you, I don't know, whatever. Yeah,
these are millions of dollars.
These are millions.
These are millions of dollars.
One of my favorite quotes ever is Jason Giambi when he was on the A's. They asked him, the A's are offering 114 and the Yankees are offering 121. Why would you go to New York when you're happy in Oakland? He's like, what's the difference? And he said, $7 million.
Right, right, exactly.
$7 million.
And look, we are all people here, whether you're listening, whether you're talking, whether you're producing, right here on this show on Sacktown Sports, that I would assume we've never been around that type of money.
Yes.
So maybe you could say, I'll take $5 million, but you just don't know unless you're in that situation. So Malik,
think it matters if you know or if you don't. It's a matter of personal preference.
Sure.
Like, I'm never going to.
And I'm not going to judge Malik either way.
You're only saying that, Texter, because you wish he took the less money. But
right.
Lord knows, if this was a situation where the Kings were trying to pry somebody from somewhere, you would be saying, why would he want to play in
for less
New Jersey for 17 when we're offering him 25? Sacramento's great. Like, it's just, you know, come on. Don't be ridiculous.
Yes.
If we have to explain why that doesn't make sense, then, you know, maybe, never mind.
All right. Let's get
let's
to
just keep it.
It's just sometimes it comes up. And,
absolutely.
Because there's always going to be somebody that says it, right?
Yeah.
Because
the smartest guy in the room. I get it. Yeah.
But I understand, but I don't like doing that because
it's also just not the reality of the situation.
Right.
Like, sorry, that's not sports. Like, it's just not. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And that, but it does. And the reason I did want to read it is because it does lead us to what De'Aaron Fox had to say. And De'Aaron Fox's approach and thought process as to what he would do or what he thinks Malik is going to do or could do.
I mean, obviously, I think he was extremely big for us. You know, people that watch us play know that he should be sixth man of the year, but at the end of the day, you know that this is a business, and I feel like what he gave to us in the 2 years that he has been here, I feel like he showed his value, what he can do for a team. And I mean, I'm happy for him regardless if he's with us or he isn't, and he knows that. But man, at the end of the day, this is a business, and you can only play basketball for so long. Yeah, definitely. I mean, for sure. But, you know, money talks. like I said, you can't play this game forever. You know, you have such a short window to play basketball. Obviously, not everybody's going to be Bron or CP and play 19, 20 years. So you have to be able to get paid whenever you can, obviously. And, I mean, that's what Vince Carter told me. And he played 21 years. So, man, Malik was great for us. Obviously, I would love to have him back. But, you know, I don't know what the future holds.
I mean, yeah, there you have it. I mean, it's really that cut and dry. And, I saw a lot of people, I would say, overreacting to that and saying, oh,
I did too.
De'Aaron's already conceding. He's gone. De'Aaron said it there. He's taking more money. It's over. I mean, I just think that De'Aaron is saying what the reality of the situation is. Like, it's a business. He even, he's quoting Vince Carter, who, like he said, played 21 years. Mm-hmm. And Vince probably told him, hey, man, the one thing that is a guarantee is the money you leave on the table, you're not going to get back. It's mm-hmm. just gone. And I think that De'Aaron's just being very real about the situation. Malik, everyone knows he can make more money, and no one's going to fault him if he does it. De'Aaron then says, of course I'm still going to try and pitch him. I'm still going to try and recruit him. We still have things that we think can bring value to his life here, but ultimately, there's nothing we can do if he wants more. If he just wants more money, there's nothing we can do.
There is nothing we can do, right? There's nothing the front office can do. It's just a matter of how much he's offered.
Yeah.
And to that
point, that's not the end all be all either.
Right, right. It's situation.
It's going to play a big factor.
Like I said, you go to Philly and you have a couple, Malik had a couple rough stretches throughout mm-hmm. this season.
Yep.
You go to Philly, they're going to flame you.
Yes.
Try saying the words Tobias Harris in Philadelphia right now. They want to throw that man in prison because they feel like he is stolen from the city of Philadelphia because he got a huge bag and he's done absolutely, absolutely nothing. Yep. They're depending more on Nicholas Batum than they are on Tobias Harris. So it's different everywhere you go. That would be the one. All of these cities are going to have certain things that are going to have pros and cons.
Yep.
At least Malik knows what the pros and cons are with Sacramento, which I believe is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the biggest point is the one you just made. And it's true of, I heard somebody mention it about Klay Thompson too. Like, Klay Thompson does the same thing where Klay has gone up and down throughout the season. And, you know, Warrior fans love Klay. He's got the four rings. He's the one who's always been the fun guy. They're never going to criticize Klay. But to your point, Klay goes 0-10 in Orlando. They're not going to be so forgiving. They're not going to say, oh, Klay brought us four. They don't care about the four
nothing,
rings
right.
anymore.
That has nothing to do with it. Or, oh, Malik brought Sacramento on the map, so we don't care that he's tricking off games in Philly. The 916 that we mentioned did follow up here. And we always give people a chance to retort.
Especially if you text it.
We are a show of the people. If he gets $25 million, I wouldn't blame him for taking that. But if it's between 17 and 20, for me personally, I would go where I'm happy with where I'm wanted. I think that's what we're all hoping.
Yeah.
We're all hoping it's close enough. Mm-hmm. But if I think that line
22
that
starts 20, to blur
21,
things a bit.
22, yeah. You start thinking about how many boats you
think
can buy.
Think about $5 million extra dollars.
$5 million extra dollars, he could buy a golf course.
Yeah.
He could buy a golf course.
I don't know if you remember during the play-in tournament, during the in-season tournament, the Kings were trying to motivate their guys to care about mm-hmm. the in-season. They were showing what they could do with the $750,000. Malik Monk could do the very same. Or if I'm Orlando, I'm doing the same thing where I'm saying, Malik, there's a $5 million gap between what we're offering versus what Sacramento is offering.
And
here's the things that you can invest in Florida for $5 million.
And you know Texas, but whether the Spurs or Orlando, they're going to play up that taxes thing. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Yep. Edward, we see you. We will get to you in just a second. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.